Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona, where he has just tucked away a huge turkey dinner. Happy Thanksgiving, and welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
Do we have a Black Friday offer?
Yeah, let's do our 50% off using the promo code 2022 half off. Go to VRTrader.com, and when you sign up for one of our many newsletters, there's a promo code spot there on the order form, and you enter the 2022 half off, and again, you get 50% off, and you got to go to VRTrader.com.
Mark, should people know something special about you?
I'm not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice. Yeah, I'm pretty stuffed. We had a big turkey feast here with some friends.
I think you get tired. There's not enough tryptophan on the turkey really to make you tired, but all the blood's gone to your stomach and your brain's just left.
A couple extra slices of apple pie didn't hurt either.
Sure didn't. Did we see going into Thanksgiving a Turkey Day rally?
Yes. You know, it's called the turkey shoot. The term was invented by Yale Hirsch back in the 1970s, and it has to do with the day before and the day after Thanksgiving. You know, everything is percentages, nothing's 100%, but it sort of indicates you would expect a little, you know, a bounce around that time frame. But, you know, this year, of course, since the October low and with the sudden rally in the Treasury market, which I think is more manipulated than an honest one, but in any event, you know, it got this, you know, year-end rally going, which is in our forecast model, by the way, which we published back in late January. Then you would see a low, you know, more like in the September-October time frame, but closer to September, and then you would see a recovery into year-end. So a lot of this is not only in my forecast model, but there's a seasonality pattern as well. But the turkey event is definitely one which is part of the, I guess, the arcane indicators that we look at, like the Super Bowl indicator or the January barometer and all that kind of, the Santa Claus rally and all that stuff, which we talk about. And, you know, it's like anything else. You have to look at the, it's like the comparison I make about a weatherman forecast. You may have a forecast, but you want to look out the window just before you say anything, because sometimes the short-term stuff changes on you.
Yeah, I made the mistake once when I worked at a radio station. There was rain pelting against the control room window, and I said it was raining outside. It turns out it was just the lawn sprinkler. I was getting phone calls. What do you mean raining? It's bright and sunny. Anyway, so yeah, looking out the window is never a bad idea, but maybe check outside the door as well. Now, with a market like this, what kind of action do you expect, and in what sectors?
Gee, well, you know, the high-tech group, the Magnificent Seven, NASDAQ 100 included as well, have been the leaders all year, and they seem to regain their prominence here in the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks since we hit the bottom. You know, even Apple Computer, which was given up for lost, you know, that since they had some problems in China and so forth, has recovered just pretty much all of its losses, and that's one of the Magnificent Seven stocks. the video, which is the big one, which is the AI play, you know, was just hit a new high over 500 just the other day. And, of course, they came out with some earnings forecast as well. And Microsoft has sort of taken the lead because of its involvement in AI. Even Tesla has recovered a little bit as well. Meta and Google are also part of the Magnificent Seven. So, you know, that seems to be what, you know, the traders and investors are jumping. You know, what has been working all year, had a little bit of a shakeout, and why not do it again? But my concern is, you know, a lot of money managers, you know, sort of forced into these stocks because particularly if clients look at their portfolios at the end of the year or the end of the quarter and the big names aren't in there, you know, the astuteness of the managers questioned a little bit, why aren't you in the hot stocks? Unfortunately, they distort the market because they represent only seven names, and if you get a weighted index like the S&P unweighted index, which is basically how each stock would act and how the market and all would respond, you would see that they have a disproportionate effect on the index, and many stocks, particularly in the Russell 2000, I think it's like 25-30% are actually down for the year. In fact, you might see some tax loss selling in some of those names come December. So there's a distortion here, and I would assume that, you know, the game is going to continue to be played here through Santa Claus rally and into the first of the year. And then maybe come January 2024, everybody might reevaluate the whole scenario and decide to exit the market, and things, attitudes might change. So it's still a little bit of ways away, but it's a game, and the game seems to be working for those names at present, and that's sort of the leadership.
What's going on with uranium? Is it still hot?
It is. More ways than one, I guess. Yes, and yeah, the big name, of course, is Cameco, CCJ, and that's been doing well and making new relative highs, you know, just about every couple of days. Not all of them are doing that, but they're all in an uptrend. If you look at the actual uranium chart itself, you know, I post that in my newsletter just about every day. You could see uranium prices have been moving higher as well. So, yep, it's in favor. And like the Magnificent Seven stocks I just mentioned, you know, there aren't too many out there in terms of group sectors that you could say, you know, have been a pretty nice uptrend, and that's certainly one of them. So, again, you know, you're chasing them a little bit here. I mean, they've been moving up for, you know, a few months. It's not like they just started a rally. They still look a bit higher, and I guess into the end of the year, again, portfolio adjustments and so forth will probably mandate that some of those are put in the various, you know, market portfolios. But yeah, it's still in play, and I guess you can still trade them to the upside.
What's going on with crude?
A lot of it is being affected by, you know, whether OPEC is going to raise prices or not. Apparently they're in some meeting now. I don't know all the details, but it's an extended meeting. It was supposed to be more of a quick meeting, and now they're thinking about it, and whether they're going to raise prices or hold them steady is sort of a question. Crude oil itself had a bit of a break the last few days, recovered a little bit just before Thanksgiving here in the U.S., and I'm still overall a bull, but, you know, there's a bigger picture view too. You know, my view that it's going a lot higher could be a couple years away. When I say higher, I mean like substantially higher. But, you know, if there's an administration in the U.S. change, you know, let's say the Republicans get in, or Donald Trump or someone similar next year, you know, an election next year, that would be, you know, pro-energy here in North America, which means the spigots are going to be opened again, and it could be, you know, much more production of oil, which would obviously impact the prices downwards. So, you know, if you take that viewpoint, and of course that's months and months away, and a lot could happen between now and then, you would have the view that oil could be quiet for a while if we start resuming production. So, but my overall view is, you know, it's a big uptrend for a lot of reasons, because of the restriction, because of worldwide demand for oil. Now, of course, we have, you know, we still have an unsettled Middle East situation, and we don't know how that's all going to play out, even though there's some hostage returns going on now. We know this is a much bigger story, and you know, there's always the risk that that could flare up again and we could end up having, you know, oil take off. So I'm a bull on the oil stocks. Many have pretty good yields on them. I still think it's a crucial element in your portfolio. They are tradable, and I'm particularly, you know, partial to Occidental Petroleum because of Warren Buffett's investment there. And also, we've seen a couple acquisitions. Chevron went after Hess Oil, and we saw Exxon go after Pioneer Oil and Gas. Both are, you know, buyouts. So obviously, there's some consolidation in the industry. So you know, these are still bullish signs, I think. So I'm overall bull on oil. You know, we may just have a little shakeout here. We'll see what OPEC says in the next few days. But if you take the longer term perspective, and if there is an administration change, I suppose that's a valid bearish factor for oil, and we'll see if that all plays out. And we know there's no guarantee that that would happen, and world demand and needs will continue to press oil back higher again. So let's see.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovitz right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovitz. Mark, anything going on with gold?
Yeah, it's sort of floundering here a little bit. It tries to go up. You know, so much focus needs to be put into the action of the dollar, which, you know, at times has greater impact than not. You know, the dollar is, you know, sort of, you know, put a little bit of a monkey wrench into the gold rally. And, you know, and we saw this happen, you know, in the recent months, and the, you know, the big move up, you know, didn't do gold or silver a lot of good. And that's, you know, that's been sort of a problem for traders. But just looking at the chart short term, to me, it looks like, you know, the dollar may have peaked out here a little bit. And, you know, at least in the last, you know, 10 or so trading days, it hasn't made new highs. It's been pulling itself lower. And, you know, we'll just see if that continues to play out. If that does, that should be pretty bullish for the, you know, gold market here. So if that dollar just takes off again, that's not going to help gold too much. I had a forecast that I put out at the beginning of the year for gold, and it showed, you know, pretty much positive pattern for most of the year, but it said come November or so, you might see a bit of a top, and that's a cyclical forecast. And sure enough, we're here in November, and it sort of peaked out and, you know, hasn't broken out through up to the upside. And also, I've been concerned about, as I mentioned this before, action of the gold shares and silver shares themselves, which are, there are a couple exceptions, but for the most part, at least history says that the shares should lead the way higher, and they haven't been doing that. Now, some argue that could be because of, you know, shortage of materials, of you know, cost of energy, labor costs, the strikes in certain areas. I know Newmont Mining had an issue down in South America with one of its operations, and that's just one example. So maybe the shares are underperforming for other reasons than the underlying metal. But they don't seem to be in sync, which, you know, sort of worries me a bit. Listen, you know, it's a volatile commodity. We've discussed this. We have a lot of gold bugs that listen to this, and they're all salivating over gold being 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 an ounce. And I guess if we live long enough, it'll get there. I see gold. Yes, it's a good alternate investment. You don't want to keep all your money in the banks. I don't trust the banks. You want to be diversified. You certainly don't want to own government securities except for maybe, you know, short-term treasury bills. So, you know, gold, there's a place for gold, and it certainly does trade around a bit. I mean, it's trying to go through that 2050 area three times already, or 270 layer, 2070 area, and it keeps failing. It keeps knocking at the door, so to speak, up there. It doesn't seem to break through. And, you know, again, a lot of people don't want to hear about it, but there's still a lot of government intervention and suppression in the gold market, and there's a lot of documentation regarding this going back decades. So, you know, again, it's not conspiracy. It's factual stuff that's been researched. So, of course, we know the government's in the markets anyway. You know, look at what they do with interest rates, and we have the plunge protection team out there that Ronald Reagan created back in 1988. So there's a lot of manipulation in all the markets, but gold in particular. So frankly, if we didn't have government intervention in that market, just based on inflation and everything else, gold should already be $3,000 or $4,000 an ounce, regardless of, you know, anything else that's happening, and it just hasn't happened. So it's frustrating for the bulls. I see it as a trading vehicle. If I had a bet here, you know, if we see the U.S. dollar, you know, start to rally again here, it's a little bit oversold and it takes off. It's not going to help gold here. So I'm a little concerned real short term in the gold here, unless that dollar really turns around or there's some type of, you know, unique movement on the part of central banks or BRICS gets involved in a big way, that, you know, and they're successful in creating an alternate currency that's backed by gold, and some dramatic news changes the scenario. I'm keeping some gold, but, you know, I'm not holding my breath that it's going to be $2,300 or $2,500 an ounce right away, which I think most gold bulls are looking for.
Anything going on the cryptocurrency front? I see two crypto exchanges were hacked and over $100 million worth of crypto stolen.
I know this is a part of the problem, you know, when you're on these platforms and these exchanges. I mean, going way, way back, you know, going back the last, you know, 15 years or so, one of the reasons I didn't get involved personally in Bitcoin itself was when the Mt. Gox platform or exchange or whatever you may want to call it, you know, went bust. That's when, you know, the Bitcoin first started trading at $10 a coin, went up to $100 or $200 a coin, and went up to $1,200, and now it's, what, $37,000 a coin. But way back then, when that Mt. Gox went under, I became really nervous personally because I didn't know whether my Bitcoin that I purchased through the exchange would be safe there. You know, there's supposed to be security measures you can take, their wallets, as they call them, ways that you can move your Bitcoin into a safe area on the internet, and, you know, the platforms where you're protected. And it's been really tricky. So the way I've been playing it is, you know, the stocks that, or I guess you call them the ETFs that track the prices versus the actual coin. So you're one step away from being robbed, you know, or if something happens, if there's a scandal, of course, you know, we've seen that with FTX and recently as well. So, yeah, it's crazy out there. So GBTC is the ETF for Bitcoin, and I've been using that in the in my newsletter here for the last few years. It's a trust. It's not an ETF, but I think they got approval to be converted to an ETF. And, of course, we have I actually made a new relative high, I think, yesterday, day before yesterday. It was over $30 a share. It was low as 8 and as high as 58 in the last couple of years. And then we've got Larry Fink over at BlackRock, which is the largest money management firm in the world, several trillion, I think, under management. I don't have the exact number. And they have that ETF pending. We've talked about this quite a few times. And if that gets approved, then you'll have another way of trading Bitcoin, which is not the coin itself, but a surrogate, which means you have protection against it being a fraud. So basically, it doesn't mean you can't lose money if Bitcoin drops and the ETF drops, but it means that at least, you know, you don't have to worry about your coin not having some the value of your investment disappearing. So that's holding Bitcoin up, because the expectation that this ETF is going to start to trade, and at some point it'll blow off and it'll sell off, and there'll be some trading opportunities. I personally think Bitcoin is going much higher. You know, I threw out a number, 80,000 a coin in the last 6 months or so on the show. I think it's around 37,000 now, and was as low as 15 in the last year. And it could take a couple of years to get to that number, but I think the trend's up. And you just think about it. I mean, it's like Warren Buffett, and we talk about that, you know, buying Occidental Petroleum. When you have a big name group or money manager or institution behind something and they promote it or talk about it, you know, it tends to provide fuel for that stock or, you know, vehicle to move higher as it attracts investment interest. So, you know, just the fact that this ETF is created, you know, is, you know, sort of support for the notion that it's real and there's institutional interest and more people will get involved and that'll drive prices higher. You know, we saw that happen when the World Gold Council backed the creation of GLD, the ETF for gold, years ago, and that became, you know, a vehicle for people to buy gold, and by doing that, it drove the prices of gold higher because the ETF has to go out and buy the physical gold to back the purchases that are coming in. So the same thing will happen, you know, with this Bitcoin, and obviously the anticipation of it has already driven it higher. So it's sort of a no-brainer, but, you know, you have to know that, like, any market or any stock, it can go up and down. It could be 30, 35, and then back to 25, or up to 40 and back to 20, and it could do that over the next year or two. So it depends what your perspective is. You know, I tend to trade stuff, you know, more than hold stuff. That just my survival mechanism by staying in the business all these years. I rather trade and know that I pocketed some gains versus taking a long-term view and going to sleep and then, you know, losing money because I don't pay attention to all the positions. That could easily happen if you own a lot of stuff. So I, you know, I write about it. We have mentioned it in our newsletter, and we are bullish. And you have to decide how you want to participate and how much and how often. But the answer is the crypto world is not dead, but the big vehicle, you know, the big gorilla in the room is, you know, GBTC and ultimately the BlackRock ETF, and that would be my suggestion.
Anything we should be looking at on the geocosmic front?
Nothing real exciting except the winter solstice, which is coming up December 21st, 22nd, and you know how I look at this stuff. Most people think it's silly, but it's not. You know, around the various seasonal time frames, you know, March, June, September, and December, you got the equinoxes and the solstices, and often within a couple weeks of those time frames, you sometimes get market changes of direction. And we've seen it happen in March a couple times. Of course, we had September one, and that was came more late October with the big low. But you know, you did see some volatility around the September 2022 time frame as well. So I sort of look at that because it's sort of big picture stuff, and there are some spectacular changes of direction on occasion on those. So I am watching that as well. Also, I want to just mention quickly, we have the big cannabis show coming up in Las Vegas, starts next week, and it's put out by MJ Biz, the big cannabis magazine. I mention this because most of cannabis stocks are very cheap, but we have, you know, couple potential government actions that the market's anticipating, which we'll see when they come to fore, which is the rescheduling of cannabis from Schedule 1 to 3, which is very positive and makes it not an illegal substance. And then you've got the Banking Act, which is pending in, I think, more in the U.S. Senate than the Congress, the U.S. House of Representatives. But the Banking Act has been on a slow stall here for a couple years, and what it does is it allows, you know, these companies in that business to conduct business legally at banks and credit cards, which heretofore they can't do or they're prohibited from doing. So even though it's legal in U.S. states, because Canada doesn't have this problem, but in U.S. states it's federally illegal, so many banking institutions and credit card institutions won't do business with you. So this really has to change because you've got many states to have, you know, declared it legal, and the federal law has to come into sync with what states are doing. So there's two things that are pending in this market, and if, you know, one or both happen, that should be positive for these stocks. It should improve business for all of them, open up markets for them. And you know, there have been times where as you approach the annual big cannabis convention in Vegas, which I say again is coming next week, These stocks tend to move up in anticipation of news around these conventions. Now, whether they already had the move and it's not happening next week, but it's something to watch here if you're, you know, closely watching the markets. It's just another sector to keep an eye on. You know, I'm looking at cannabis, I'm looking at oil, I'm looking at gold, I'm looking at the Magnificent Seven. You know, you look at all the things that are going on and you sort of pick your poison, you know, which one you want to get involved with or a little bit of all of them. So that's just something to keep an eye on.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us on a holiday.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on X at HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.